You're listening to Arrivé by The Cycling Podcast. This episode is made possible by Bicycle, the leading global marketplace for pre-owned bikes.
Well, welcome along to this Arrivé episode from the Cycling Podcast, Feminin. My name is Rose Manley, and today we are talking about the Flèche Wallonne, the women's Flèche Wallonne that's just taken place. As always with the Arrivé episodes, if you don't know what happened, if you don't want to know, then don't listen to us, because we're going to be going all the way through exactly what happened. So it's going to be full of spoilers and, well, spoiling the race with me, or maybe not spoiling the race, bringing a lot of insight and know-how and knowledge and bringing the listeners more insight into the race than they could have even thought was possible is Denny Gray of the British Continental. Hello, Denny.
Hi, Rose. Well, you didn't mean to, I don't think, but you actually gave me a brilliant introduction.
I give you such a polite one. I did in the end. I did intend to, as always. I never intend to give you a compliment at all, Denny, but I ended up giving you one there. Well, Denny, I mean, we can actually, I mean, not brag for ourselves, but for the podcast, can't we? Because on our last regular cycling podcast, Feminin, Orla Chenoweth, only one speculation on that podcast, and that was that Kashinevia Domel was going to win one of the Ardennes Classics. And both of us, when we got to the finish, where Kashinevia Domel indeed did win an Ardennes Classic, won Flèche Wallonne, we both were like, where is Orla Cam? We want to see Orla in floods of tears and on the studio floor. That's what we wanted to see.
Yeah, I mean, we have tried to contact Orla, but she hasn't responded. Presumably, she is just uncontrollable.
She's beside herself.
Cannot get to her phone. She's still in floods of tears somewhere. Of joy, of course. But amazing win. And I'm sure Orla's going to be very, very happy.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, when Orla said that, I did think perhaps that it was a kind of a prediction that was being made more with the heart than was with the head, perhaps. Because, you know, Kashinevia Domel, the plain fact of it is she hasn't had a win since 2019. I was like looking back at her records, because obviously that is a huge dry spell that she's had. We're not saying, you know, she hasn't won a world tour race. We said that she hasn't won anything since 2019. And looking back at her results, she won loads of very small races in 2016. She won a couple of races in 2017. She won three races in 2018, one of those being overall in Ardèche. And she won a couple of big days in 2019, one at the Women's Tour and one at the Amstel Gold Race. And then nothing since then. So I did think when Orla said that Kashi was on for it, that it was more of a wish than perhaps a prediction.
Yeah, I mean, I think I can't speak for Orla, but it did feel like a kind of prediction from the heart. But on the other hand, and I know people have been saying this for the last 5 years, but it does feel like it's been coming with Nivea Domer. She had such an impressive season last year without quite getting the win, although she did win the Gravel Worlds, of course. During the Tour de France Femme last year, Rose, we were talking up her potential for winning kind of Grand Tours this year on the back of her performance there. And I think this season she's just looked a slightly different rider, slightly more mature, a little less gung-ho. Thinking back to some of the races we've watched her in, and there haven't been many this year, but on Strada Bianchi, the last big climb for the finale up La Tolfe, she put in a stinging attack, and only Vollering and Capecchi could follow at that point. And they were, you know, following with gritted teeth. So that was a sign that on those kind of really steep ramps, she was perhaps one of the standout riders already. And then I think the other sign for me was in Flanders, where again, you know, up the Paterberg, the last decisive climb, it was only her and Longo Borghini. Well, they made the difference there, didn't they, through Nivea Domer's acceleration. So she had the strength in her legs, but also I think she's shown the maturity to not be quite so gung-ho. She hasn't put in attacks when she didn't need to. She's conserved her energy for the right moment. And of course, this race is all about that anyway, isn't it? I mean, we've seen so many times that you need to conserve your energy until the murder hui. So,
and not even on the murder hui, but even like there's so many twists and turns on that that final slope, that it's kind of, you always think that you've got to, you've turned the corner, you've got to the end, and it keeps going, keeps going. And even when she went for that sprint, tried to out-sprint everyone at the end, it was like Marty McCrossan was, you know, saying, oh, she's won it. And then the camera kept panning out and panning out and panning out. And he was, you could hear Marty was thinking, oh no, I've got to keep filling this because it's still a while to the line, because it just keeps going and going.
Even that attack was well-timed. I mean, we've seen so many editions of this race in the past where people attack at the wrong time and then they kind of run out of energy, but she seemed to time it just right. And she had that explosivity to create the gap, which I think was important, but it also, not only in terms of the difference it made, of course, on the road, but also in terms of just denting the morale of Vollering and Longo Borghini. Because I think, you know, when you're on the limit like that, that is also, it's all partly a mind game. You know, when you think, if you think the game's over, then that plays a part. So it was interesting after the race, though, Rose, I don't know if you heard, but she said that she didn't want to celebrate until she crossed the line. But after what happened on Sunday to Lorena Vivas, who of course celebrated too early and lost out to Marianne Vos at the Amstel Gold Race. So she was obviously conscious of the fact that anything could happen. And as you say, in that race, with that climb just goes on, and you forget how just long it goes on, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, obviously great, showing great patience and even celebrating to not even celebrate. And I have to say, I did at the top of the show really push the point that she hasn't won anything since 2019, but I'm totally wrong, because I just even thinking in my mind that obviously she won the gravel on the road is what she hasn't won anything on. She did win the Gravel World Championships, which was a huge win at the end of last year. And it was kind of very similar, because we saw a lot of the road peloton show up, didn't we, at that Gravel World Championships. And it was a very similar way in which she managed to get away, still, you know, on an incline, and kind of sprint away from Demi Vollering. She did that in the Gravel World Championships, and she did that here today. Now, we've already spoken, obviously, plenty about the winner, Kashanie Viedoma, but I should actually, seeing as I have actually written a race summary, I should kind of summarise what happened in the earlier parts of the race, because we will be getting to that. And of course, it was actually a bit of a new look to the Flèche Wallonne Féminin that greeted the riders this year, because there were some major changes on the course. The removal of the Côte de Chérave, which has been the location for several winning breakaways in the past. The main breakaway of the day went with 40 kilometres gone. Julie van der Velde, Sarah Martin and Eleanor Hartman, that she's of the Rollon team, they all got almost 5 minutes on the rest. Grace Brown and Paulina Royakkers, who we'll talk about a bit more later, set off in pursuit on the Côte d'Aref. But by the time the TV pitchers joined the race on the penultimate time up the Mer de Fouilly, Eleanor Hartman was losing ground on her breakaway companions, leaving Martin and van der Velde out front with about 3 minutes on the chasers. Then a bit of a rare sight, SD Works putting someone on the front, Femke Geheritsa, on the front to claw the breakaways back. The race was almost done for Royakkers and Brown on the final Côte d'Aref ascent when Rhianna Marcus pulled at the front of the peloton, but Royakkers set off solo, catching Martin and van der Velde ahead with just under 10 kilometres to go. At the same time, we saw Niamh Fisher-Black also suffer a mechanical, needed a, well, not even mechanical, we saw her come down actually, but she needed a full bike change there, which effectively put her out of contention. Elise Chabé briefly formed a quartet with Royakkers, Elisa Longo Borghini and Lotta Kopecky at the front of the race, but Marcus again brought them back. And in sight of a chip shop, which me and Denny have recently learned is one of Lizzie Banks's favourite things, at the chip shop, Rhianna Marcus went clear herself. Under the Flamme Rouge, Marcus had a narrow margin on everyone else, but it was snapped up with relative ease on the lower slopes of the Mer de Fouilly, with Demi Vollering leading the pack. Vollering, Longo Borghini, Kashanie Viedoma, Ashley Mormont-Passio and Evita Music proved the strongest, getting a gap on the rest. The five soon became three, Vollering versus Longo Borghini versus Nivea Viedoma, with, as we've already talked about, Nivea Viedoma eventually launching her sprint to come around Vollering and take the win. Now, we talked a bit about kind of, you know, so much patience, but obviously they had to be even more patient, really. The weather was so bad out there, you know, it would look like snow when they were kind of getting onto the podium. Really cold conditions, really cold rain. And I did actually think when I was watching it, the riders are being so calm up this Mer de Fouilly. Normally we see these kind of little attacks,
go and little accelerations, but they all were kind of just keeping the pace. I didn't know whether it was partly trying to just stay on Demi Vollering's wheel and knowing that if you can just stay with Demi Vollering, then you've got a good chance of winning, because you can just come, you could, if you can come round to her at the end, then you're definitely going to win, kind of was the mentality perhaps. But when I looked back actually at the previous editions, got my my Casio Nivea Doma, as it was crowned. Well, your Casio Nivea Doma, wasn't it? Your calculator, the Casio Nivea Doma, out to try and do a few calculations. And, you know, it was about sort of 30 seconds slower than we have seen in the past 4 years. In 2023, it was about 3 minutes 30 up. 2022, 3 minutes 30 again. 2021, 3 minutes 15. 2020, 3 minutes 20. That was like the last kilometre, how long the last kilometre took. So obviously the riders were going, well, almost 4 minutes it took them to do that last kilometre today. Obviously the weather taking a big part of that. But, you know, did you see any other kind of factors taking a part in that, Denny, as well?
I don't know. It's really hard one to explain the timing. I mean, I'm not sure what the wind was like, whether that played a role. But the weather certainly did seem to play a part in the race overall, didn't it? I mean, Nivea Doma was said after the race that she felt that played into her hands. She likes those kind of weather conditions, although she did say all her team was shaking from the conditions originally. But they did a great job looking after her and bringing her changes of clothes and stuff. But of course, we know from what Elisa Longo-Borghini said after the race that affected Lidl Trek's race significantly, because they went into the race with Gaia Realini as their leader. We saw Longo-Borghini kind of playing a team role. She was covering attacks, using up a bit of energy during the race. But then towards the latter end of the race, Realini told Longo-Borghini that she wasn't feeling great. And kind of gave the nod to Longo-Borghini to take on the leadership mantle. So that played a role, because first of all, it meant Realini wasn't there to contest the final climb. I mean, she did finish, but she wasn't up there with the top riders. But obviously, Longo-Borghini had already used up a bit of energy, and we know that she's in great form.
We saw a lot.
She won. She beat Vollering in De Brabantse Pale the other day. So we know her climbing legs are there after Flanders and that race. So there was a slight question mark about whether or not she could have contested for the win had she not used up that energy. I mean, it's hypothetical, but it certainly changed Lidl Trek's race, and I'm sure it affected other teams' races as well.
Yeah, Lisa Longo-Borghini finishing third still. So that's, you know, great to get a podium. But I did get that sense in that post-race interview that was a slight sort of, what if hanging over her a little bit. I don't think that she felt like she gave all that she had. I mean, Demi Vollering, perhaps a similar case with her. I mean, before the race, a lot of talk had been made about Neve Fischer-Black for SD Works, perhaps she being their kind of chosen rider, or at least maybe she would get a kind of a free run to see what she could do. She obviously had that big bike change that took quite a long time, actually, within 10 kilometres to go. So she was kind of out, because I did think that we had seen Vollering quite a lot, bringing back these little... There was a main breakaway, but there were kind of a few little attacks going off the front of the group, often seeing Vollering doing the work there to bring it all back together. And I did feel like, you know, Vollering, she has such a killer instinct. But when I saw on that Murder Wheat, I didn't feel like it looked like she had that edge today. I mean, she always looks super, super calm, doesn't she? Apart from that time in the Omloop when she was throwing her hands up at Annemiek van Vleuten. The rest of the time, she looks like it's very much all in her control. But yeah, I thought that was interesting. You know, obviously she perhaps might not have the confidence going into this race. As you mentioned, Denny, losing to Elisa Longo-Borghini and Brabantse Pale, and the results not really going her way, not really meeting expectations so far this season.
Yeah, I mean, she obviously hasn't had the season she had last year, where she was just, you know, undefeatable in the Ardennes. She got the hat trick, of course. And I was looking back, actually, she had the same programme in 2023 as she's had this year, same start to the season, 7 races in. But she'd won 4 races by now, including Flèche Wallonne, whereas she hasn't won a race yet. She's got 3 podiums, but she doesn't seem to be quite the rider she was last year yet. Maybe that's because she's had a different approach this year with the Olympics and the Tour de France Femme habit happening later. I don't know. But, you know, I mean, people might even talk about the fact that she's leaving SD Works Pro Time. And is that having an effect? I'm not sure. I mean, it seemed definitely seemed like the team were riding for her today. Lotte Kopecky was a kind of a great team player today, chasing down attacks and getting involved in kind of leading the peloton at the right time. So I don't think that was a question mark. And yeah, as you say, she was so calm, wasn't she, going up? Well, she seemed so calm. She had a great poker face going up the word of he. I'm sure her legs were burning. It just seemed that, I mean, she was the one who led the peloton into the bottom of that climb, wasn't she? She didn't need to. She could have stayed two or three positions back, but it almost seemed like she wanted to dictate the pace. She felt she needed a steady climb. You know, she feels she's lacking that explosivity that we saw from Nivea Doma, for example, that we've seen Vollering in the past. I don't know, but she's certainly not who she was last year.
You're listening to Arrivé by the Cycling Podcast. This episode is made possible by Bicycle, the leading global marketplace for pre-owned bikes.
A very big thank you to Bicycle for sponsoring our series of Arrivé episodes this spring. We've got all of the spring classics covered, and it's entirely thanks to Bicycle's support that we've been able to do this. So I'm here to tell you a little bit about Bicycle. Go to the website, bicycle.com, or download the app onto your phone. And for a limited time only, all of the Cycling Podcast listeners can get a 0% seller's fee on Bicycle if you're looking to sell one of your bikes. Just to be clear, it's free to list your bike on Bicycle, but there is a nominal seller's fee that is deducted from the sale price when a bike is sold. But for a limited time only, TCP24 will give you a 0% seller's fee. So if you're looking to sell one of your bikes, I know, very unlikely, hard to let go of them sometimes, isn't it? But perhaps you're looking to make room for something else. Well, Bicycle is the place to list your bike. It is the online marketplace for buying and selling bikes. It's cyclists buying and selling bikes to each other, and so that gives you a great degree of confidence whether you're a buyer or a seller. If you're a buyer, the confidence that the bike will be what it says it's going to be, and the whole transaction is covered with a whole series of buyer protections in place until the transaction is complete. And if you're selling, well, you're marketing your bike to exactly the right people. And from looking on Bicycle, there are bikes of all brands, all ages, all conditions. And well, I think the lesson from looking at the Bicycle website is if you are clear and honest and direct about the exact bike you are selling, you'll find a buyer for it, because people are in the market for secondhand bikes all of the time. And because Bicycle is trusted by both buyers and sellers, you can get a deal done very quickly. I think most bikes sell within sort of 10 to 14 days of being listed. So if you're looking to make space in your bike storage room, garage, shed, wherever it is you keep your bikes, perhaps you've got your eyes on something new and you need to make space, Bicycle.com is the place to go, or download the Bicycle app. And remember that discount code TCP24, and there's a 0% seller's fee for a limited time only.
Well, I did mention before that there were some major changes to the course this year at the Flèche Wallonne, and that main change being the removal of the Côte de Chirave, which actually we have seen attacks go from before. It kind of sits between the Côte d'Aref and the Mer de Huy. And we have seen, in fact, Anna van der Breggen, I read, was very, very vocal about the fact that she didn't like this change this year. She's obviously now a DS, but a seven-time winner of Flèche Wallonne, so you think she would be a kind of an authority on speaking about it. And the Côte de Chirave is actually where Anna van der Breggen made a winning attack, or at least went away with Dinan and Kasia Nivea-Doma back in 2018 to then go on and win. And I was going to say, it obviously made a huge difference to the race. I don't really think it made that much difference to the finale of the race, but the rest of the racing was kind of very different because of not having that climb, Denny.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it just takes out another key point in which teams might plan to attack. And as Anna van der Breggen said before the race, you know, if you're not among the absolute best climbers, in her words, you have to try and get away before the Mer de Huy. So that that climb was a great launch pad for that kind of move. And I guess it was a great place for those kind of, I guess, people who felt they were in the kind of the second rung of climbers. If you get away there, then you stood a chance of keeping away into the Muir Mhuí. But this time, as you said, oh, I guess you're intimating.
Right? Yes.
Perhaps we just saw a more typical race, you know, a breakaway that eventually was established, brought back. And although there were a few attacks before that final wall, we didn't really see anything significant, anything that really threatened any other result than a kind of a bunch sprint, as it were, up the Muir Mhuí. So, it did seem to kind of change the dynamic a little bit and make for maybe slightly less engaging racing, dare I say it.
No, I would have to agree with you, Denny. I did think it really, I mean, we always say with this race, it all comes down to the Muir Mhuí, but this time, you know, it really, there really wasn't that much. Well, we should actually talk about what there was before the Muir Mhuí. And, you know, I think a standout performance from Paulina Rooijakkers, actually. And also just some, you know, some gutsy breakaways going. But I think they were all, even they, all of the breakaways that did go were kind of cagey. Took a while before there was a breakaway even. But yeah, Paulina Rooijakkers, she was a real standout rider for me.
Yeah, I mean, she just had an incredible ride. Fenix de Koninck played their kind of usual energising role in the race, actually, because we saw her get away twice in the race. She'd been away and her teammates were playing a brilliant role in trying to interfere with the peloton. I think there were four of them up there at one point trying to get in the way of the chase. She was eventually reeled in, but then she attacked again, something like 13 kilometres out, and reeled in once more. And going into the final Muir Mhuí, she seemed to be at the back of the peloton, but she finished sixth in the end, which is absolutely remarkable. Not only the fact that she finished sixth, but, you know, she would have been several seconds behind Vollering going into the bottom of the climb. And she somehow picked her way through a number of riders to make it sixth, having had a very attacking race. So I think, yeah, she's a rider that probably be thinking, next year, I want to go into the Muir Mhuí. Having not gone on the attack, having been the protected rider and seeing what I can do against the best climbers.
I know it was interesting, wasn't it? Because I was thinking, you know, she did so much before the Muir Mhuí and, you know, we all knew that she would do quite well on that climb, but to finish sixth is quite astounding. But it did make me think, well, who were Fenix de Koninck hoping, pinning their hopes on? Because Yara Kastelein obviously is, you know, was among their team and she's had top tens there before, obviously has put in some really good performances this season as well. But I was wondering, you know, it was Paulina Rooijakkers, I guess, trying to do kind of what Rhianna Marcus was doing, in that if you can start the Muir Mhuí with 15 seconds buffer, maybe you can get to the top just about. I mean, you have to have a huge buffer when you hit the Muir Mhuí and very good legs to get to the top without anyone else coming past you. But I did wonder that maybe, yeah, what would we have seen if Paulina Rooijakkers had saved a bit of her energy in the run-up?
I mean, I'm sure she'll take enormous confidence from that result. You know, she may think, what if? But on the other hand, that's... That feels like a real breakthrough ride for her. And, you know, if she's got that kind of form, she's perhaps one to watch out for in the, you know, for the rest of the season.
And obviously we saw a lot from Rhianna Marcus. I think we kind of glossed over her a little bit, but we saw her also bringing a lot of the breaks back, bringing a lot of attacks back. And then, I mean, getting 15 seconds on the peloton on the Muir Mhuí is probably not going to be enough. I remember years ago when Demi Vollering was still at Park Hotel Valkenburg, that she had a huge advantage, and obviously I think we didn't know at that point how big a talent she was and was going to become, but she had a massive advantage coming into that kind of the last few kilometres, and that was just kind of swept up quite easily. And I think probably now, without having the Côte de Chirave, you need an even greater advantage, because there's just less opportunity for you to stay away when you get away. But it was very impressive from Rhianna Marcus, I thought, and a very kind of attacking Visma Lisa bike, who obviously took the first win of the Ardennes with Marianne Vos on Sunday.
Yeah. I mean, she did what she had to do. She knew she had to go long, and she, you know, 16 seconds wasn't going to be enough of a gap. I mean, the problem is with the Muir Mhuí is that essentially it's like a lead out, isn't it, going into the bottom of that climb. So the peloton just gathers momentum. It's slightly downhill. It's very, very hard to keep a gap. And of course, the, as we've already said, the Mer de Huy is a very long, long, painful, steep climb. So to not be arriving fresh there, having stayed, you know, been on the break, and not have a time gap, the odds are really stacked against you, aren't they? But it was good to see her kind of visible, because I don't think we've really seen much of her this season. And she's another rider that I'm sure we might see more of when it comes to the Grand Tours.
Of course, we did see Elise Shabby of the Canyon SRAM team doing some great teamwork. You know, I think a lot of it is a solo effort on Flèche Wallonne, but obviously getting to the right position, being in the right place at the bottom of the Mer de Huy is so important. And we did see that, a huge amount of teamwork from Elise Shabby, who I thought actually at the finish, when Kasia Nivedoma, her teammate, was on the floor, you know, delighted, it took a minute for Elise Shabby to realise that she'd won, because she kind of looked down at her and looked a bit confused. And then when she found out she won, she was absolutely elated. But, you know, it is huge for Canyon SRAM, this win, isn't it? Because they haven't had a win all year, yet they have so, so much promise. They have a really, really strong team, one of the strongest teams, but not necessarily a team that have been getting many results.
We've been saying last year, hadn't we, how much promise they had in their team. You know, they'd got stage wins in the Grand Tours with Bauernfeind, and with Nivedoma's breakthrough performance and Chloe Dygert coming back, and we'd really talked them up. But they hadn't really had a successful season until now, and we've really only been talking about Lidl Trek and SD Works.
Well, we say not successful, but, you know, not winning.
Well,
but they have been up there, haven't they?
They have been up there, yeah. But I think you would have expected them to have had a win by the middle of April, even in a kind of smaller race, maybe not in one of the classics. But so this is a big, big result for them. We know that they've got kind of stage wins up their sleeves in Grand Tours. So nearly Grand Tour season. I can't believe the Vuelta is going to be starting at the end of this month. They'll be really happy with that. And I think they've obviously got a lot of young riders. So they're almost rebuilding the team, aren't they, under Magnus Backstedt and a kind of a whole set of young riders. So with Nivedoma kind of now taking that win, I think that will bode well for the season, won't it?
It must be so, so pleasing for Kasia Nivedoma to get this win, not just because, you know, she has a bit of a win drought these past few years, but also just because I think she does get a lot of criticism for, you know, and I've definitely done it before, about her kind of attacking too much and being too, you know, being a swashbuckling type rider, which we love to see, but then not kind of getting the win. And also seeing the level raise so much of her teammates. I mean, we saw Ricarda Bauernfeind featuring quite heavily in Amstel Gold Race, and they've had Grand Tour wins, not from Kasia Nivedoma, you know, last year. So it's kind of one of those things where the pressure was really on Kasia Nivedoma to get a win, because she has been a protected rider, and she has been a protected rider for so long. There are so many other riders on that team that must be kind of chomping at the bit to get the chance to be the leader, that she had to come up with something, didn't she? She really did.
And she's really handled the pressure well. I mean, she's obviously a very emotive rider, and that's one of the reasons why people absolutely adore her. But she must have been carrying a lot of weight and a lot of pressure. Nearly 5 years without a major victory is a long, long time. And you obviously noted the gravel worlds, but on the road, that's a long, long time. And a long, long time to be the leader of a team. And you must feel, although the team might be, you know, enormously patient, you must feel like, well, there's only so long I can continue to be a leader if I don't get a result soon. So it's always felt like she's just this another big win's been around the corner, but we've seen before that sometimes that doesn't happen for riders. So it really is a huge moment for her.
I hope you were shedding a tear, Denny. We'll have to check in with Orla. We haven't heard from her yet, but we'll have to check in with her to see if she's recovered yet.
Yeah, I was watching with my 7-year-old son, who's now a keen cycling fan, and when I asked him who won, he said, "I don't know, it's somebody with a very long name." So he's not quite
a Nivedoma fan
yet.
No. Oh gosh, that's so good. But well, we'll see, won't we, where this leaves us for Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Of course, I'll be joined with Rebecca Charlton for our Arrive episode after that for Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Do you want to give any big speculation, big predictions? I haven't prepared you for this, Denny, at all. But yes, tell us what you think is going to happen on Liège-Bastogne-Liège. You always like to send through on WhatsApp your kind of hot takes, don't you, while just before me and Rebecca record our Arrive episode. So I'm expecting the same this time.
Well, I can't really see past the big three. And I'd say the big three, I think, for me would be Vollering, Longo Borghini and Nivea Doma. So I would expect, it's a very boring prediction, but I can't, the way the season's gone so far, I can't see a win from any other of those riders. So expect me to get that completely wrong. And for
okay, you've gone for, yes, a very safe speculation, dare I say.
Mm. You've got to plump for someone now, Rose. You're going to put me in the spot.
Well, no, I mean, I agree those three. I'm going to say Longo Borghini because I think she's looked so, so strong. Obviously, Brabant's Appeal is kind of starts the Ardennes season and she won that, so... Lidl Trek have been so smart about their riding recently as well. So I'm plumping for her. But again, not a very out there prediction. But we shall see what happens there. Please join us for that Arrive that will be going out on Sunday night after the Liège-Bastogne-Liège Femme. But that's all from our Arrive from Flèche Wallonne. Thank you, Denny.
Thank you, Rose.
And thank you for joining us, listeners.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.